Light and shade. The dappled green of forest leaves. The splashes of white foam on dark gray seas. The pools of light that collect like water in the fissures of a rock face. Light and shade. Color and form. That's how I try to see the world. The boundaries between one thing and another. The distinctions. Anybody who carries a gun in the name of peace needs to be comfortable with shades of gray. I live in no man's land, surrounded by water and working under fire, caught between extremes. This is what I try to capture and paint on canvas. It's like trying to bottle lightning, but it helps. Yes?
Good morning, Major. May I come in?
Well, I'm under arrest. I can hardly stop you, can I?
True enough, but it never hurts to be courteous. Dr. David Glenny, pleased to meet you. May I sit?
Yeah, sure, why not?
So, these are the famous paintings. They're remarkable.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Oh, please do. Best I can manage is stick figures. My art teacher at school said I had two left hands. Your mother taught art, didn't she?
So, who are you? Oversight committee? Come to see if I'm insane?
I have no preconceptions, Major. There are people baying for your blood. Court-martial, dishonorable discharge, that kind of thing. I'm here at the request of Colonel Carter. She wants an independent assessment of your mental state. When they brought you back here, you were confused.
It's so beautiful. All the colors, the shapes, it's like magic. It's like magic and sounds, and I can see sounds. I can hear light. Oh my God. Well, I'm fine now.
Oh, come now, Major. I think you know why we're concerned.
Everybody move back! Now! Get away from the controls! You too, Colonel Shepard. So help me God, I will shoot you. All right. So what? You want me to look at Rorschach tests or something? Please, tell me you really don't want me to talk about my mother.
Don't worry, I'm a very literal shrink. I've collected statements from all the relevant personnel. They've told me their version of events. Now you tell me yours. Simple as that.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What have I got to lose?
Your friends, your reputation, the rest of your life. Trust me, if you're not insane now, you will be after 20 years in solitary. Shall we start?
Every planet is unique. A lot of them may look the same at first, same trees, same sky. But then you try to paint them. You look at them again. They're all different in small, strange ways. We moved recently. Atlantis, I mean. We flew the whole city across space from one planet to another. We're still floating on a blue saltwater sea, no land in sight. The sky is blue too. A few more satellites in orbit, but if you don't look up, you might be forgiven for thinking we haven't moved at all. But things changed. The first day we got here, Colonel Shepard and me were on the balcony outside Ops looking at the view. And then he says to me, when we get back to Earth, I'm going to get a map and work out what place is the farthest away from any kind of sea or lake. I don't care if I never see water again. He couldn't see it, you understand? The differences. But I could. I must have painted the seas of Lante 100 times, in oils or watercolors, with a brush or a palette knife, calm, choppy, stormy, in sun, under clouds, blue, green, that deep azure it used to have when the moon was high. It had moods, you see. But the sea here is different. The colors shift in odd ways. I paint it every chance I get. It's darker. More cobalt, less aquamarine. And when the satellites align, it has flashes of yellow in it. Yellow like you'd glimpse on the best sunset in winter. I've spent days trying to mix up that shade. But Colonel Shepard just sees water. It's not just the sea either. The city is different. I've painted this city from every angle, inside, outside, day, night. I suppose you could say, I'm trying to tell its story. So, it was 3 days ago, and I was on top of the central tower, and there's a balcony alongside the jumper bay, and from there, you can see the whole city spread out below you, and I was painting it, trying to see how the different light here changes the city. The shadows are different, definitely. The light is muddier somehow, and I was trying to capture that. And then, the light changed. Everything started to glow, like it was luminescent or radioactive. The whole city shone, and I remember thinking, wow, are we under attack? My senses reeled. The world started to spin. I felt lightheaded. I could hear the city, the sounds of Atlantis amplified, its whirs and clicks, the oil in its pipes, the hum of its machinery, the chatter of all the people who live there. It was deafening. And then it stopped. I was lying on the ground. Slowly my senses sorted themselves out. And I could taste this. I don't know, this sounds weird.
Go on.
I could taste hot dogs.
Hot dogs?
Yep. With relish, tomato.
I see. Hot dogs.
Yeah. Is that important?
Everything is important. So, how would you describe what happened to you? Was it a seizure of some kind? A revelation from God?
I don't suffer from seizures, Doctor, and I certainly don't hear the voice of God. It was like all my senses got scrambled up for a moment. Down was up, light was dark, soft was hard. It was like someone was whisking my brain, you know?
Not really, Major, no. So, is this when you went to visit Dr. Keller?
Oh, not immediately, no. Because when I stood up and looked at the canvas, well, that's the first time it happened.
Is it here? Can you show me?
Sure. There you go.
That's interesting. Can you tell me what this is a picture of?
I have no idea.
But you painted it.
I don't remember painting it. But when I got up off the ground, there it was. And the paint all over my hands.
You painted it with your fingers?
I guess. I mean, it looks like I just slapped paint on my hands and made swirls.
And this isn't your normal style?
If my mom saw that, she'd have a fit. No, definitely not my normal style.
And how did you feel when you realized what you'd done?
Truthfully, a little freaked out.
And that's when you went to see Dr. Keller?
Yeah. Look, I don't know Dr. Keller very well. She's always sort of been in the background, you know. And Carson was a friend. I felt comfortable with him. But Keller just seems kind of nervous. You know, doesn't inspire confidence. And when you're going to ask someone if they'll check out your brain for errors, you want to think that they know what they're doing. But it's not like I had any choice. So I told her exactly what had happened, and she hooked me up to the scanner and took a look at my head. It all looks fine to me, Major, she said. There's nothing. Oh, hang on, what's this now? She peered at the screen and then looked at me quizzically, and like I said, she doesn't inspire much confidence. You say you felt lightheaded and fell over? Uh-huh, I said. Well, there's some odd readings from your hippocampus, she said, pointing at a patch of color on the screen. Now, it might as well have been a map of the seabed for all the sense I could make of it. It's a part of the brain that deals with spatial awareness. Probably nothing, just a dizzy spell. I can put you under observation if you like, but I could hear it in her tone. I was wasting her time. So I told her to forget it, and I left. Now, Carson would have insisted. I wish she had.
Do you want to hear her account of your visit?
Surprise me.
I hope you don't expect me to do the voice. Major Lorne appeared sullen and cranky. He said he'd been feeling odd, but refused to elaborate. He asked me to examine him, and I agreed. A full brain scan and body scan revealed a mild elevation of activity around the hippocampus, but still within normal parameters for a man who regularly comes under as much stress as he does. When he left, he seemed agitated. I put a note on his file recommending that Dr. Heitmeier ask him about stress during his next routine session.
So?
So you didn't tell her what happened? The painting, all of that?
I just didn't want her to think
that she should investigate more fully. As it was, she just thought you were being a bit of a jerk. Nothing to say in your defense? Then we'll continue. What happened next?
I went to get something to eat. I was feeling a little disconnected, like my feet weren't quite touching the ground, and my senses seemed heightened. Sounds were clearer, colors were brighter, smells were, you know, smellier. I figured I should get some food in me, couldn't hurt, right? So I chose the pasta. The cook here makes good pasta. Uses lots of sun-dried tomatoes, like my nan used to make. But it tasted of hot dogs. So did the juice and the jello. Hot dogs. I don't even like hot dogs that much. I felt like everyone was looking at me. My heart was pounding. I was sweating. I didn't want to attract attention, so I sat there and I shoveled it in anyway. Rodney McKay sat down and started talking to me. I say to me, I mean at me. I was kind of wrapped up in my own thing, and I nodded and pretended to listen, hoping that he'd just go away and leave me alone. Now, Rodney's not a bad guy, actually. Kind of irritating if you're not in the right kind of mood. He's all right with me, but I didn't want company. Anyway, something he said brought me up short. He was telling me about his day, and that he'd been having a problem solving some kind of technical thing in one of the labs, and then he said, but of course, it wasn't my fault, because there was that power surge and everything went screwy. Power surge? I asked. Never a good idea to interrupt McKay. Never. First, he looked annoyed at having his train of thought broken, and then he stared at me like I just asked the stupidest question in history. The one that shut down all the systems for 10 seconds, he replied, about 2 hours ago. What, were you asleep? What time exactly was that? I asked, knowing what he was going to say. And he told me 11:42, which was just about the exact moment I had my, you know, whatever you want to call it, incident, seizure, whatever. So what was it, I asked? An attack? A glitch? And he just said it was some kind of power loop feedback error caused by systems realigning themselves to our new environment. Something like that, anyway. Half of what he says is gibberish to me. But, of course, it occurred to me that there might be some kind of connection between the power surge and what happened to me. Perhaps, I don't know, it was some kind of new weapon. And then I thought, yeah, wait a minute, right, that's the Wraith's evil plan. They'll hit us with an energy beam that turns us all into finger painters, yeah. So, anyway, I laughed it off, told myself to stop being silly, and convinced myself that Keller was right. You know, it was just stress. I'd never felt so bad. My hands were shaking. I couldn't eat any more of the food, so I just decided to go back to my quarters and hit the sack.
I spoke to Dr. McKay about that lunchtime. He didn't notice anything out of the ordinary in your behavior.
If a door mechanism 3 floors down malfunctions, McKay notices, but people? No, not so much. I could have done a striptease on the table and painted myself blue. So long as I didn't interrupt his story, he wouldn't have noticed a thing.
I'll bear that in mind. You came back here and went to bed. You obviously slept well because next morning you failed to report for duty. Colonel Shepherd called you. He says you sounded sleepy, confused, and a little panicky. Is that right?
I did sleep well, yeah. All afternoon and all night. It was Shepherd's call that woke me. All right. Keep your shirt on. Yes, Colonel. I'll be up to see you in a moment. I think I must have, what the? I'd better call you back, sir. There were about 20 of them. Canvases strewn all over the place. The paint was still wet. I picked some up and tried to make sense of them, but they were insane. Crazy whirls of color, occasional shapes and forms that made no sense, scratched into the paint. And then I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror. There was paint on my face, my chest, my hair, my hands. I looked around. It was on the walls, too. Above my bed was a huge mural, a mad mix of oil and watercolor with patterns traced into it. I felt dizzy just looking at it. My head began to pound. I painted these in my sleep. And that's when I really got scared. We'll be right back. I told Colonel Shepard that I was unfit for duty. My throat was raw. I could hardly get the words out. He wasn't happy, but I've never called in sick before.
I know.
Shepard asked if there was anything he could do to help, and I almost asked him to bring a bucket of turpentine and a mop. When he hung up, I just stood here for I don't know how long, just looking at the pictures, trying to make sense of them.
And could you?
No, but...
Yes?
There was something. When I was younger, I went on a trip around Europe, backpacking, and I visited all the great art galleries, the Hermitage in Russia, the Musée des Beaux-Arts in Belgium, the Louvre, the Prado. It was magical, really. There were some paintings I could stare at for hours. Bruegel's Fall of Icarus, Turner's watercolors, anything by El Greco. I remember one painting in particular. It was The Potato Eaters by Van Gogh. It's in the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam. It's a simple picture, quite dark, of a group of peasants sitting around a wooden table eating potatoes under an oil lamp. But one of the women in the picture has a face. I can't describe it. She's cutting a potato and looking to her right at a man, maybe her husband or a brother. And the look on her face is so full of innocence and longing and loneliness. It's incredible. I lost time in front of that painting, zoned out completely. And I sort of came to an hour or so later, and I'd just been standing there staring at her, kind of lost in her eyes. No painting ever had that effect on me again. I've studied paintings. I've enjoyed them. I've gazed at them forever. But that feeling of being lost in the vision of it, that was unique. Until I looked at those paintings in my quarters. As I looked at those images, they sucked me in. They spoke to me. And I started to get impressions.
Explain.
Not feelings exactly, or flashes, just sort of glimpses of states of being. God, listen to me. I know how I sound, Doc, but it's hard to express. Listen, look at the mural. You see that weird scratch pattern at the center of it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now look at it closely. I mean, really, really closely. Now relax. Clear your mind and focus on it to the exclusion of everything else. Just let it wash over you. Now, what do you feel?
Kind of awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what everyone else says, too.
Well, what did you experience when you looked at it?
Loneliness. Deep, aching, awful loneliness. This one is pain. But not physical pain. It's the pain of separation, of having something you want or need taken away from you. This one is hunger. This one, warmth, comfort, confusion, violence, and fear. And this one, it's hard to describe. It's kind of a feeling of distance, of being away from home. But it's bigger than home. It's more than that. Imagine a fish on dry land, gasping for breath, and thinking of what it's like to be underwater. It's like that.
It's a blue circle, Major, with orange splashes on it.
Oh, God damn it, I know that.
All right. So you spent some time here looking at the pictures, getting impressions. And that's when you decided to visit Dr. Heitmeier, yes?
Well, once I'd tracked down some turpentine and got all paid off and taken a shower, yes. It's regs, you see. If you call in sick, you have to report to either Dr. Keller to see if there's anything physically wrong with you or Dr. Heitmeier to see if you've gone screwy. Keller hadn't helped me. Maybe Kate could. Now, I felt uncomfortable talking about this stuff to her. It's pretty whacked, but I know she really helped Taylor when she was having those hallucinations, and I figured, maybe she could help me, too. So, I laid it all out in front of her, told her the whole thing. And when I'd finished, she just sat there for a moment and opened her mouth to speak, and then she kind of turned inside out and grew tentacles. I was falling, weightless, but I was still in the chair, holding onto it for grim death, and Kate was sitting across from me. She wasn't falling, but she stayed in front of me as I fell, which makes no sense at all. And she kind of blossomed like a flower or a sea anemone or something. It just ripped open and all these fronds burst out of her and started waving around and changing color. I could taste hot dogs again. And this time, there was a smell. But it was the smell of jasmine. I knew the station alarms were going off, but that sound was outside me. And there was another sound inside me that drowned it out. But it was kind of a breathing, a heartbeat, water sound. My skin tingled, like something was brushing me with soft fur, but cold. Very, very cold. And then I was alone, above Atlantis, looking down on the city, which was glowing again, like it had done the day before, and the noise was there again, all the noises of the city, but muted this time, not overwhelming. I floated there, and I felt this sense of home, like this was my home, not just the place I live now, but the place I came from, the place I belong. It was like I was the city, inhabiting every part of it, every system, every corridor, every strut and pillar and window. I was Atlantis. And I was hungry and scared and alone. And then it was over. I was back in the chair in Kate's office, and everything felt off-kilter, and I could taste blood. The alarms were muted like I had earplugs in, and there was something in my eyes. When I wiped them, my hands came away red. I was weeping blood. My nose was pouring, my mouth was full of it, my ears too.
That's one of the few elements of your story I can corroborate, Major. Dr. Heitmeier's description is quite vivid. At the instant the alarms began to sound, she says, Evan went rigid in his chair like someone had put 1,000 volts through him. He stared at me, and his eyes went so wide I thought they were going to pop out of his head. He looked at me in complete horror. Then he closed his eyes tight shut, and tiny drops of blood were squeezed out. Then he began to spasm. Blood began to seep from his ears and nose and from his mouth, too. It was horrible. She pressed the emergency alarm button, worried that you might have some kind of hemorrhagic disease. She thought you were starting to bleed out in her office. What happened next is a bit confused. Why don't you tell me your version?
Okay, well, when the seizure thing had finished, I wiped away the blood and tried to convince Kate that I wasn't ill. I was trying to describe the vision to her when the doors opened and an emergency medical team entered in full hazmat. Now, at this point, I still had no idea what the alarms were all about, but I could hear a voice over the loudspeakers giving some kind of warning. I started to panic. And that's not like me. I'm a career soldier, Doctor. I've been captured, threatened, shot at, broken down into my constituent parts, and shot across the galaxy, and, you know, I'm fine with all of that. I have a pretty cool head. I couldn't do this job if I didn't. But I panicked. I don't know why. I started trying to explain to everyone that I was fine, even though I knew I wasn't. It was like I was watching myself from a distance, thinking, whoa, that guy is strung out, but I couldn't do anything to bring myself under control. I remember trying to get the doctors to leave me alone. Keller was there, and she came at me with a syringe, and she was trying to calm me down, but I didn't. I just freaked out. I backed towards the windows and then out onto the balcony, with Keller coming towards me. Now, Kate's office is high, Doc, really, really high, and I was trying to warn myself, saying, hang on, not a good idea to back towards the edge of a balcony at this height. But I couldn't get control of how I was feeling or acting. And the next thing I knew, I was falling again, but this time, for real. The whole city shook itself like a dog that's just come out of a lake, and I was flung off the balcony and into thin air. I reached for the railing as I fell, and my fingers brushed the cold metal, but I couldn't get a grip, and then the city pivoted beneath me, and the balcony receded. I saw the doctors in their yellow hazmat suits tumbling backwards away from the door, and heard the whole city, almost screaming in pain, shaking itself to pieces as I fell. And I knew I was a dead man.
I can answer one of your questions, Major. Dr. Keller didn't just have a syringe in her hand. She also had a portable medical scanner, and she got some readings before you fell. Apparently your hormones were all over the place, adrenaline, cortisol, testosterone, and your amygdala, which controls fear, was working overtime. So you shouldn't feel bad about panicking. Whatever was happening to you, it was messing with your brain.
So you believe I'm not mad? You accept that this was something that was being done to me?
I wouldn't go that far. It's suggestive, but that's all. Now, this is the point where we lose track of you.
Yeah, I know.
So I suppose my first question is, why are you not dead?
You tell me. It's all a bit of a blur. I know what I think happened, but hey, I wasn't exactly seeing things clearly at the time.
Well, just start at the beginning and take it a step at a time. You were falling from the balcony as the city shook.
Yeah. So the layout of the city is pretty straightforward. If you go to the balcony off Kate's office and jump, then you'll fall about 15 stories, hit metal, and that's all she wrote, you are done. But as I fell, in a straight line, straight down, the city itself, still glowing, at least in my eyes, was moving all around me. It was impossible to orient myself. I mean, not only was I tumbling, but the city itself was literally spinning and rotating, shaking from one side to the other. So I'd been falling for, I don't know, who knows, a few seconds, maybe more, maybe less, when I hit the side of the building. Thwack! Or, strictly speaking, it hit me, swatted me like a fly in midair, and there I am, spread-eagled against the side of this tower, back pressed up against the glass, looking over the city below me and the sea beyond, thinking, oh my God, I am so dead. I was still falling, you see, down the side of the building like it was some huge slide. I just about had time to wonder, what would happen if the city shook in the opposite direction again? I pictured the building suddenly lurching forward and me flying away, hit like a baseball out to sea. But then I slid down onto another balcony, and just as I did so, the building swung around at a crazy angle, the horizon tilted, and I realized the north end of the city itself was rising out of the water at about 45 degrees. I was shoved up against the balcony railing, but this time I grabbed a hold and held on as tight as I could. It was like being on a tilt-a-whirl at the fairground. First one way, then the other, then up, then down. The city itself was having some kind of seizure. Then, slowly, the violence of the tremors reduced. The city splashed back down into the sea, and just before everything came to a halt, I had one final vision, and it was, I don't know.
It was what?
I can't describe it.
Try.
No, really, I mean, I can't describe it. It was a feeling, but more than that, it was a color. And a picture, and a smell, and a sound, and something else, too. Something different, like a sense you've never used before, or didn't know you had. Like, I don't know, like, okay. Imagine you're blind, right? Born blind. Never seen a thing in your life, ever. And someone tries to describe to you the color red. You have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Your brain just couldn't conceptualize it, right? Or you're born deaf, never heard a sound, and someone tries to get you to understand Mozart. It was like I had a new sense. More than one, actually. My mind was doing things it shouldn't be able to do. I was sensing things I've never been able to sense before, and no human ever has. So we don't have words to describe it. I mean, the concepts are too complex. I experienced it. It nearly killed me. My head was leaking blood out of every orifice just with the effort of it. I can remember it, but I can't explain it. The only word I can think of for it is alien. It was alien.
What, you mean you were sensing an intruder in the city?
No, you just don't get it. Alien as in different. Totally and completely different. So different that we can only see it out of the corner of our eye. We taste the merest hint of it with the tip of our tongue. Hear it like a whispered conversation three rooms away that you're straining to hear, but you can't quite make out. Now, the whole of it is just incomprehensible to us. We don't have the tools. We're not equipped. So, I was on the balcony. The city was settling back into the water. My heart was racing. I was out of breath, full of adrenaline, confused and scared. And just for a second, I can't say I saw something, but let's say I perceived something.
All right. What did you perceive?
Thoughts.
Thoughts? Whose thought?
The city's. Atlantis's.
What was it thinking, Major?
Look, haven't you been listening? I don't know. I couldn't possibly know. All I know is that it was aware, and it was trying to talk to me.
And you're still sure you don't hear the voice of God?
Oh, go to hell.
Sorry, that was a cheap shot.
No. Look, I'm sorry. Believe me, I know how insane this all sounds.
Can we continue?
Sure, right? Yeah, of course. I'm not going anywhere, am I?
Okay. So you're on this balcony.
I took a minute to get my breath and check I wasn't injured. My ankle gave a bit when I hit the balcony, but otherwise I was fine. And the city seemed to have settled down, but the alarms were still going and I could hear an announcement.
If you have been injured, call the medical team and give them your location. Do not move. Wait for help to arrive. The situation is under control.
I looked around me, trying to get my bearings. I was 4 or 5 floors below Kate's office. I looked into the room behind me and saw that it was someone's living quarters, and it was empty. Their clothes and books and stuff were everywhere, flung around by the city's movements. And I figured there'd be a lot of effort going into cleaning up and working out what happened. There were people running everywhere in the quarter outside. Medical teams, technicians, soldiers heading to secure key locations in case we were under attack. In all the confusion, I took my chance. Ran to the transport terminal, beamed myself to the corridor outside my quarters, and made it inside.
And this is your first big problem, Major. Up to this point, you've just been experiencing hallucinations. You've done nothing wrong, per se. But you know the protocols, they're very clear. You should have turned yourself in for medical examination. You were weeping blood. You could have had an alien pathogen in your bloodstream. The consequences of your decision to evade capture could have been catastrophic. You put this station at risk, knowingly. You're going to have to work very hard to convince people not to charge you for that. So take me through it. What were you thinking?
I was sure there was a connection between my visions and what was happening to the city, but the clues I had, if you can call them that, were too oblique. I couldn't make any sense of them. I had the crazy notion that the city was alive. But even in the state I was in, I knew that was madness. It's a city, for God's sake. It's a collection of artifacts, structure, and stuff. It doesn't have a consciousness. And anyway, we'd been living it for 4 years. If it were alive, if the ancients had somehow built a living city, wouldn't we have realized that by now? Why was it only trying to make contact now? So, I dismissed the idea. But something was trying to communicate with me. I was sure of that. Something either in or on or under the city was reaching out, and for some reason, it had chosen me. What I needed to do was work out what it was and what it wanted. And the only concrete evidence that I had was the paintings. The answer had to be in the paintings. It had to be. The only plan I could come up with was to line them up against the wall and sit there staring at them. And the world just faded away. I know you can't feel the paintings, Doctor, but they're powerful. The emotions they evoke, they're strong. They're too strong. I mean, impossible to control. They overwhelmed me. I was sitting there crying, not blood this time, you'll be happy to know, when the door opened and Kate Heitmeyer entered, and I snapped back into reality. Dr. Heitmeyer, Kate, please, don't call security. Just come in for a moment, please. She nodded and walked inside, uncertain, but not afraid. Are you all right? She asked. Yeah. Yeah. What are you... The paintings... She said, I thought I'd come see them, try and figure out what was going on with you. Ha! I had the same idea. I can't work it out. She stood by the door for a moment, making up her mind, and then she stepped forward, grabbed a chair, and sat in front of me. "All right," she said. "Let's see if we can work this out together, okay?" We swapped stories. I told her about the vision I'd had in her office. She explained what was happening outside. "Rodney and Colonel Carter are both off-world," she told me. "Rodney's found some new piece of ancient tech, and he won't admit that he doesn't know what it is, so she's gone to explain it to him. So Colonel Shepard and Raddick are running the show. They think there's some kind of computer virus infecting the systems, causing random power surges, and Raddick's trying to flush it out. He managed to boost the inertial dampeners just before the city went mad, so there aren't as many injuries as you might have expected, but things are pretty chaotic out there." "And Dr. Keller?" I asked. "Should I expect her to come after me in a hazmat suit again?" "No," said Kate. "She's got her hands full." I nodded. "Well, good. And you're not going to tell her I'm here?" "I should," she admitted, "but no, I think whatever's happening to you, it's more my field than hers." "Fine," I said, glad to have an ally. "So, what do you suggest?" Oh, and how I wish she hadn't said what she said next. "Hypnosis. And if I start bleeding again?" I asked. She promised she'd snap me right out of it, so I agreed.
"Do you want to hear it?"
"Excuse me?"
"What she said under hypnosis. She recorded you."
"Oh, no. Oh, man, that's just embarrassing."
"You have no idea. Take a listen."
So alone. Where are we? Where are they? The city is so beautiful, so beautiful. All the colors and the shapes. It's like magic and wonder and sounds. And I can see sounds. I can hear the light. Oh my god. Oh my god. Steel arms. Oil. Heart. Senses. Like water on glass and oil on water and light under the cloud, under sky, under blankets, over colors of colors. The smell of hay and rain and sound and candy floss and colors.
Oh, God, please make it stop. I will pay you a month's wages just to lose that somewhere it'll never be found. If Colonel Shepard ever hears that.
Too late, I'm afraid. What's your recollection of the hypnosis and what happened next?
I remember the visions were uncontrollable. It was like I was in a gyroscope. I couldn't find my feet. And then it just went black and I passed out. I woke up on the floor with Kate leaning over me, shaking me. "Major Lorne, Evan, wake up," she was saying urgently. "We have to get out of here. They're evacuating everyone to the main tower." I shook my head. I felt groggy and disoriented. I looked at my hands, and they were covered in paint. So I sat up and saw that I was surrounded by 5 more canvases, all freshly painted, all the same mad swirls of color with patterns scratched into them. It had happened again. Kate was yelling at me to get up because we had to move, but I couldn't find any strength in my legs. Then the floor shook beneath me, and I realized the city was going haywire again. "It started when you went under," said Kate. "The second you started hallucinating under hypnosis, the city started to rumble. I've been trying to wake you ever since." Slowly, the rumbling subsided and stopped. I was awake, and the city was quiet again. "Let's not do that again, huh?" I said, and Kate nodded. She was panicked by what happened. She wanted to call in, tell Shepard and Zelenka where we were and what was going on, but I begged her not to. "Let's just study these paintings first. The key is here somewhere. We just need to find it. Please, Kate, trust me." She agreed, and we tried to line the paintings up in what we guessed might be the order that they were painted. We could tell from the ways some colors had become mixed together that certain canvases were painted after others, but a lot of it was guesswork, really, apart from the final 5, of course. Once we had them all stacked up, we went through them like flashcards. Kay would hold up a canvas, and I'd say what feeling it evoked. Hope. Pain. A sense of having misplaced something terribly important. Loneliness. Loneliness. More loneliness, affection, a sense of excitement at having mastered a new skill, like skiing or riding a bike or something. Love. No, wait. Not romantic love. Family love. Falling. Fury. Confusion. It made no sense. I had all these impressions, these feelings, but they didn't cohere. And then, as we cycled through the paintings again and again, I started to have an inkling of a theme, an idea, a thought. But I couldn't pin it down. It was like seeing something out of the corner of my eye, and every time I turned my head, it was gone. And then, I don't know why, intuition maybe, I glanced away from the painting Kate was holding, and I looked at my bedside table and the picture of my sister and her family. And I knew. The whole thing, fully formed, just dropped into my head. I leapt up and ran to the comms unit paging the ops room. "Zelenka, are you there?" I shouted. "Major Lorne," he replied. "Where are you, Major?" That doesn't matter now. The virus. Have you purged it yet?" "Any moment now, Major. Why?" "Look, just don't, okay? Just don't." Then Colonel Shepard's voice came on the line. "Lorne, are you in your quarters? We thought you were dead," he said. "Colonel, just stop. Radic," I yelled. I need to explain." And I heard a muffled conversation going on, and I realized that someone had put their hand over the mic. Now, I didn't have much time, I figured, before Keller & Co. came to drag me away. Shepard came back on the line and said, "Lorne, this virus is just too dangerous. There's been a power buildup over the last few hours. If we don't get control of the system soon, the whole city could just boom, you know?" Now, I heard Radic yelling something about an imminent explosion, and I shouted at him to stop, but Shepard had no choice, and I heard him say, "Do it, Zelenka," and then the city just screamed. There was this huge explosion, and the city lost all power. It fell completely, awfully silent. Just the sound of the wind, and then the waves, and the power fading out of all the systems. And I felt the pain of it. I felt the city die. Pain faded. I was lying on the floor again, with Kate leaning over me. Everything was quiet. You could actually hear the waves lapping against the piers from my room. Normally, it's just the hum of machinery. "Zelenka! Zelenka, are you there? Zelenka!" Comms were down, and I knew I didn't have very much time. I thought it was probably already too late, but I had to try. "Kate, look behind you, on the shelf. My camera. Could you get that? Okay, it's got power. I need you to take photos of every canvas and then bring the memory card to ops. Can you do that?" "Great." I forced the door open and ran as fast as I could.
"I find Dr. Heitmeier's conduct quite hard to understand, Major. She took a huge risk not reporting your location to Dr. Keller. Then she hypnotizes you, monitors you while you paint some more of these things, and then starts taking snapshots. Can you offer me an explanation as to why she would behave this way?"
"Have you ever been in combat, Doctor?"
No. "And neither has Dr. Heitmeier. She's a psychiatrist, not a soldier."
"But this is a military installation. This city has come under attack countless times, been infected by plagues, occupied by hostile forces, shot at, blown up, abandoned, recaptured. And she has been here during all of that. So yes, she's not a soldier, but she's one of us, Doctor. You get a bunch of people, take them away from everyone and everything they've ever known, strand them far enough from home, and place them in constant danger, those people will start to trust each other because their survival depends on it. Kate broke protocol, yeah, but stick around here long enough and you'll find that protocol just isn't equipped for the sort of stuff we encounter day in, day out. Instinct and trust are just as important, maybe more so. So Kate trusted me. She went on a limb for me in a way that she probably wouldn't have if we were anywhere else, but she's a comrade in arms, Doc."
"Colonel Carter thinks she has the hots for you."
"Really?"
Yep. That's why I'm here. They wanted an opinion from someone who wouldn't succumb to your charms.
Oh, come on. You gotta be kidding me. Did she, you know, say she had the hots for me?
Moving on, Major.
Yeah, sure, of course.
How did you come to realize what was going on? Sorry, what you thought was going on. I need you to take me step by step through the evidence that led you to your conclusion.
I can't do it.
Excuse me?
I can't do it. Didn't work that way. There's no series of clues that I can point to so that you can go, oh yeah, I get it. It's not a whodunit, Doctor. I'm not Sherlock Holmes. It was just an accumulation of impressions. How can I explain that? Okay, are you familiar with pointillism? It's a form of painting where you build a picture using lots of small dots of a particular color. If you get too close to the picture, it's completely meaningless. But if you step back, the image comes into focus. Well, I don't know, it's kind of like that, except I can't step back. Each painting I did was one of the dots, but I'm guessing what the larger picture is just based on the impressions I get from looking at the pictures one after another.
Like a montage kind of thing?
Sort of. There was a sound, too. I kept hearing it in my head, whether it was part of the communication or whether it was my own subconscious trying to give me a clue, I don't know, but I heard it on and off throughout the whole thing.
And it was...
Do you have kids, Doctor?
No.
No, me either. But I am an uncle, and my sister's got two kids. When she was pregnant with the first, her husband was always away a lot, so I went with her to the hospital when she had her first scan. And it was amazing, seeing him there on the screen so tiny. But the thing that really got me was when they turned the volume up and I could hear his heartbeat. It's the weirdest thing, hearing the heartbeat of a person who hasn't even been born yet.
And that's the sound?
That's the sound.
So you looked at the pictures one by one, building up the impressions they gave you, and then you looked at this picture of your sister and her kids and remembered that day, and it clicked.
Yep.
So tell me.
And this is the bit where you either have to decide to believe me or send me to the nut house, because I haven't got a shred of evidence.
Try me.
Okay, here goes. Imagine a dimension so completely alien to ours that the laws of physics are different. We have 5 senses and 4 dimensions. They have, I don't know, 12 senses and 8 dimensions, let's say. And in this place, there are vast, monstrous, intelligent cities fighting a war. The consciousnesses of these city creatures, they're huge, totally different. If we were to touch their minds for more than an instant, we would be driven utterly mad. There are people, kind of, inhabiting these cities. But whereas in our universe, the people build cities to live in this place, the cities build themselves and then create their inhabitants to maintain them. So, some time ago, one city is expecting a child. But their gestation process is quite different to ours. They don't grow a body inside them, but a tiny spark of consciousness, which grows within the very structure of the parent city for millennia. Then, when it becomes self-aware, it's released by the parent and it begins to create a body for itself, weaving a city from the raw materials available to it. Now, this pregnant city comes under heavy attack thousands of years ago, and so it opens portals to other dimensions, searching for a place it can send its child, somewhere peaceful and secure where it can grow unthreatened. And quite by chance, one portal opens onto a world that contains the perfect safe haven, a silent, sunken city, uninhabited, abandoned, waiting. Atlantis. It puts its child in this cradle, and then returns to the battle, closing the portal behind it. So this child grows, unnoticed, unaware, in the city. Then we arrive, but we don't know this child is here, and it's not conscious yet. So we, you know, live together, share the city, neither knowing the other is even there. And the child begins to wake up, but there's no parent to birth it. It's afraid. It can't make itself understood, doesn't know who or what it is. So it reaches out for help. And for some reason I can't begin to fathom, it talks to me.
I've painted this city from every angle, inside, outside, day, night. I suppose you could say I'm trying to tell its story.
Sorry?
Something you said to me earlier. Just a thought, but everyone else here looks at this place as a manufactured thing. Just a place to live, work, fight. But you, you really look at it. You see this place with different eyes. If anyone was going to hear what the city was saying, it was going to be you, Major. I mean, really, no one else was even listening. So you thought you knew what you were dealing with?
Yeah. I mean, I was sure of it, totally certain, but I couldn't tell you how I knew all that.
Just impression.
Exactly. So, as the child woke up, it started to thrash about in panic. That was what was causing the power surges. Zelenka thought it was a virus, so he isolated, some part of its consciousness, and hit it, which nearly killed it, but not quite. I felt its pain and confusion as Zelenka tried to delete it, and I knew I had to try and save it, but how? The transport terminals were down, so I had to make my way to Ops on foot, and I ran as fast as I could, but I knew that sooner or later I would run into someone who knew I wasn't supposed to be on the loose. It was Captain Kennedy who tried to stop me. He's a nice kid, and I took a chance that he wouldn't fire. I just didn't have time to go through the whole getting captured and trying to explain things, so I knocked him out, took his gun, and kept running. When I arrived in Ops, it was chaos. Everyone was shouting, mostly at Zelenka. Shepard was the loudest. "I thought you said nothing could go wrong, Radek," he was yelling as I ran in. "Well, nothing has. The virus is gone." I thought Shepard was going to punch him. Then, "Sure, the virus is gone," he yelled, "but so is everything else." "Well, you know, omelet, eggs," said Zelenka with a forced smile, trying to make light of it. "Zelenka," said Shepard through gritted teeth, "we are sinking." "Oh, well, it'll be an hour or more before we're underwater," said the panicking scientist. "I should be able to work something out before then." Then, "Hey, someone spotted me." Everyone turned to look. I don't know what I must have looked like. Caked blood all over my face, all sorts of paint smeared on me head to toe, out of breath and carrying a gun. Shepard didn't even blink, just raised his gun and said, "Stand down, Major." I stood there, paralyzed, not knowing what to do, when Captain Kennedy came running in behind and smashed into me. We both fell to the floor, and I took advantage of the opportunity. I got him in a neck lock, and I pressed my gun to his head, and then I pulled him upright. "Colonel Shepard, you need to listen to me," I said. "Let the kid go, and we can talk about it, Lorne," he answered, his aim never wavering. "No time for that. I need you to trust me, Colonel." "Well, put down the gun, and let's talk about it," he said again, but I couldn't. Maybe you're right. Maybe it was all the hormones. Maybe I was deranged from all the visions, but I felt that talking, explaining, was the last thing that I could afford to do. Time was short. I needed to be decisive. And at the end of the day, I'm a soldier, not a negotiator.
Colonel Shepard had been briefed by Dr. Keller. He knew your body chemistry was out of whack, so he judged there was a good chance you might actually shoot the captain.
He was right. I would have. Him too. I was so focused on what I needed to do, I was ready to do anything. It's like I'm remembering the actions of another person, though. I mean, that's not me. I don't act like that.
Shepard agrees with you. He's been very vocal since your arrest. Thinks we're taking it all too seriously and we should just chill. Where is it? Lorne was just taken over by some alien thingy. Happens all the time. Let him go already. He's articulate, that one. So, continue.
"Everyone move back! Now! Get away from those controls! You too, Colonel Shepard. So help me God, I will shoot you!" Colonel Shepard led the way, lowering his gun and indicating that everyone should move away from the controls. Once they were clear, I moved in, keeping the captain between me and the others, my gun at his head. "Not you, Radek," I said. "I need you." Shepard nodded and Zelenka came in to join me at the main console. "Now, is everything dead?" I asked. He nodded. "No power anywhere." "Well," he said, there are still occasional power surges, but they're very small." That gave me hope. Now, if only Kate would hurry up. "Okay, could you I don't know, could you capture one of those power surges and route it to a specific system? His answer was pure gibberish, but I eventually got him to simplify it to a yes. Okay, I said, so when the next surge comes along, no matter how small it is, route it to the comms. We're gonna send a message. Shepard didn't like the sound of that. Lorne, he said, we're still new here. Nobody knows where we are. The last thing we want to do is draw attention to ourselves. Where are you sending a message to anyway? So I told him. Lantia. Are you insane? He yelled. We just left there. Who are you signaling? Oh, crap. You're not really Lorne, are you? Yes, sir, I am. Then what the hell are you doing? At that moment, Kate came running in with the memory stick. She froze when she saw the standoff that had developed. Kate, bring me the stick, I said, but she hesitated. What's on that, Doc? Asked Shepard. By now, he's really confused. She told him, and the only answer he could give was, huh? Kate didn't wait for permission. She ran over to me, and I told her to give the memory stick to Zelenka. Radek, plug this into your laptop, get the images from the memory stick, and beam them as a message to Lantia. Use all the power you can muster. Zelenka looked scared and confused, but he plugged the memory stick in and started working. Don't do it, Radek said Shepard. I could tell he was getting ready to make a move. Colonel, I shouted, trust me. This is the only way to save Atlantis. It's not a computer virus. It's a child. Colonel, it's a child, and it's dying. I'm ready to, mumbled Zelenka, and I threw Captain Kennedy aside and slammed my head down on the enter button of his laptop.
And then it happened.
Yep.
To most of the people who were there, and they all tell the same story. A sudden migraine, blurred vision, white noise that suddenly stopped when the power came back on. Everything went back to normal. When Zelenka checked the systems, there was no trace of the virus.
Well, it went home. I saw it leave.
You?
Everyone else froze and started holding their heads, but I could see clearly. I don't know, maybe my brain was starting to learn how to process this stuff better. I ran to the balcony and looked up in time to see the whole sky just rip apart, splitting open. I looked through that rift into another universe, the things I saw. And then the city glowed again, blinding white, which slowly faded away, and then the whole just closed up.
Forgive me, Major, but I don't understand what you did.
I knew I had to try to save it somehow. I had to try and send a message to its parent to come and get it. You see, if the parent city survived the attack and returned to collect its child, it would find us gone. Atlantis isn't on Lantia anymore. But how do you contact an alien city thing in an alternate dimension when you don't even speak its language?
Of course, the pictures.
The pictures. They came from the mind of one of these creatures. They're the closest thing we have to its language. The best we could do was send the pictures to Lantia, hope the parent city was looking for its child and would understand what the transmission meant.
And within a second of you hitting send,
Mommy came to get Junior.
Thought I'd find you here, Major.
Hey, Doc.
Dr. Keller tells me your hormone levels have returned to normal and there's no permanent damage.
Yeah, feel great. It's kind of a shame, though, I guess.
How's that?
Well, the visions are fading. You know, when I look at those canvases now, all I see is swirls of color. They're just paintings to me now. I'm back to seeing the world in three dimensions, it seems, flatter.
You should have heard Dr. McKay and Colonel Carter when I told them your story. They got really excited. Started talking so fast I couldn't keep up with them. All about Einstein-Rosen bridges and non-Euclidean space. At one point, I swear, they actually started talking in equations. Just numbers and letters.
Yeah, they see the world differently, those two.
So do you, I think. That's beautiful. What are you painting?
Oh, well, I'm trying something new. When that, portal opened, I looked into, another universe. I can't describe it to you. It was awesome. It was terrifying and beautiful and impossible to describe. For a while there, my brain was wired so differently that I could see in more than three dimensions, but I can't communicate it to anyone, not literally anyway. It's impossible. So I'm trying to paint it. I know I can't really capture it, not really anyway, but I can maybe get some sense of it on canvas. A hint. A taste.
An impression.
Yeah, Doc. An impression.
Here with Cameron Smith, just recorded impressions for us for our second season of the audio dramas for Stargate Atlantis. Thank you so much for doing that today.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Have you done this kind of recording before? Have you done audio dramas before?
I've never done an audio drama before. I've done some narration for some gigs back home. I do some documentary type stuff. I find that quite fulfilling, but I've never actually done sort of this type of thing before. But it's a lot of fun. I've spent a lot of time doing ADR sessions or, you know, after the fact, re-recording and fixing all the mistakes I make on set. So I'm totally comfortable in the environment, but I've never actually done this type of thing before. It was a blast.
So as far as performance goes as an actor, how different is it a process for you?
Well, I found myself using my body a lot. I thought maybe you guys thought that I would be having seizures or something like that because I'm used to moving to help express what I'm thinking or doing. It's probably what was making all the noise in here. It's a little different because you have to rely on your voice and timing and pausing and breath for everything, whereas you could use a look on camera. So it poses its own unique challenges, but at the same time, it's... I quite like it. I had a girlfriend once when I was young who told me I had a nice voice, and she was probably lying, but I've always kind of enjoyed to sort of play with that sort of thing, so don't burst my bubble if I don't.
Right, it sounded really good. You have got a very good voice for radio.
Oh, yeah,
as far as the character of Lorne goes, mm-hmm. his painting, I know, kind of came a bit out of left field, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
What did you think of the story and the fact that that was explored more?
You know, anything that explores Lorne in any depth is great. it was an interesting thing to pick. I think it was one of the only real insights into him, so I think it was a logical place to grab hold of and explore from. Really interesting connection between the paintings and the city and how he sees and his perception and stuff like that. And, you know, I never in a million years would have thought of something so creative. But I think it was a really neat a way to explore his character. It was really enjoyed doing it. I just wish they would have done it in the series.
Lorne's an interesting character, isn't he? Because he started off on SG-1, right? He didn't start off as this Lorne. So
that's true.
Just tell me a little bit about that evolution.
Well, it was I don't think it was necessarily intentional. I did the SG-1 as a kind of a last minute sort of thing, and I had been told on set by several people I knew in a quasi friendly way, Michael Shanks, and he took me aside and he said that, you know, just so you know, they like to bring people back a lot on these shows. And then I think it was the next after that season of SG-1 they decided to do the spin-off, the Atlantis spin-off, And they had a new character that they were bringing in for the second season. And so I went in to audition for it. And it was, I forget the name. It was like Captain America or something like that. And so we went and did it. And I guess it went reasonably well. And they decided to bring the Lauren character back and just make it Lauren. So, and then I don't know how many I ended up doing at the end of the day, but it's certainly a lot of fun. It's nice to work.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, talking about that, Atlantis is finished now.
Yes.
And in fact, even the airing is wrapped now.
Oh, is it?
We've seen the finale.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think when you'd heard that it had been cancelled and you realised that you weren't going to get to play Lauren again? Was that disappointing?
Well, yes and no. I mentioned earlier in the green room that I... The lucky side and unlucky side of my career is that I haven't had my own show in quite some time, so I'm always disappointed about that, but I work quite a bit. So I wasn't too disheartened when that happened. Shows come and go all the time in this business. You have to get used to that. But still, at the same time, it's after, you know, five seasons or whatever it was, it's a big family. And everybody knows everybody, and it's a lot of fun to be on set, and it's almost like... it's a stretch to call it going to work. So when you lose that, social outlet almost, and the fact that you get paid for it, it's, you know, it still stings. And I remember the day that they told everyone, and I think that it was a, you could hear the gasp, the sort of communal gasp, from everyone. And it was, it's always a strange moment when you hear a show get pulled and all the rumors start about what's going to happen next and where's everybody going to go. And but I wasn't so – it didn't affect me too much one way or the other. I just keep trucking along, looking for my own thing.
They're still talking about the possibility of doing movies, aren't they, for Atlantis?
My understanding was that they had definitely planned to do two, one of the one SG-1 and one Atlantis, and that and the economic modalities of the day have deterred them from the Atlantis one for the time being. I know that they still want to do one and that they have one in the works, but my... sources tell me that it's been put on hold for a while. Yeah, but not indefinitely.
Well, that's good. Is Lauren a character that you would be interested in playing again?
Like this, yeah. I mean, if they were to delve into the character a lot more, I would be really interested. I mean, we tried to position ourselves in a prostituted kind of way to get into the new series, the Universe spinoff, as one of the lead characters, but they want an entirely new direction. So I'm not super keen on continuing Lauren in the form that he is. If they opened it up and added some, you know, some dimension to him, then I would be interested. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, the fan base for these things is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You know, so no one, I think, in the right mind would want to steer clear of that. So, I don't see why. I mean, it's very tough to come across actors that are going to say no to work. So if somebody offered Lauren a job, I'm sure Kevin Smith would probably step in.
And just now that you've done an audio drama,
yeah.
Do you like the form? Is that something that you do again?
This is very, very interesting to me. When I got the script, I was amazed at how much actual dialogue there was and didn't think we would get through it. But at the end of it all being said and done, I really quite enjoyed it. It was a really professionally run, and I'm shocked that that much time went into that character, and I was really happy with the way it turned out. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I'm excited to hear it when you're all done.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time. It's been great having you here.
You're very welcome.